Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. Good morning, everybody. I sound like shit as fucking usual. Getting that sickness right along. Sent my kid back to school, and now she's coughing, so we'll see if we don't all get the fucking coronavirus. Fucking fantastic. I hope this episode finds you alive and well. And we're going to be doing something interesting today. We literally have, today is a day of remembrance, the rich trials began today, so many years ago. Now let's see what's going on. All right. We are 13 away. I've got some interesting shit that I have stumbled across, and a lot of it does make sense. So, if this shit hits home for you, then, I don't know, maybe you'll learn something. Now, first we begin our journey with the which tribe? Now, in witchcraft in Salem, which everybody knows about Salem, Massachusetts, how much is one of the days on March 1st, 1692, authorities interrogated Sarah Good, Sarah Osborne, and an Indian slave, Tituba, to determine if they indeed practiced witchcraft. So began the famous, or rather infamous, Salem Witch Trials of 1692. Over the following months that occurred, more than 150 men and women in and around Salem were jailed on charges of what was called exercising certain detestable arts called witchcrafts and sorceries. 19 people, including 5 men, were eventually convicted and hanged on Gallows Hill. What would make you a witch in these days? You know, what horrors befell on people because they are too stupid? Like, what would one have to do? Question authority? I mean, come on. They got all upset about them saying the fucking earth revolved around the sun. So what consists? What makes you a witch? Hmm. Now, an additional male suspect was
pressed to death. Pressed to death. Others died in prison. Today, they are seen as victims of a tragic mistake. How many of those do we have? We get a lot of those, don't we? I mean, think about the kids that got separated from their families and are having to be reunited. I think they were victims of a fucking mistake. I would say so. I would say that definitely counts. Now, Cousin Abigail Williams and Elizabeth Pear, ages 11 and 9, respectively, began to enter trace-like states and to suffer from convulsive seizures in January 1692. By late February, prayer, fasting, and medical treatment had failed to relieve their symptoms or to quiet the blasphemous shouting that accompanied their fits. So you mean they had Tourette's and seizures and you fucking tortured them? Sounds about right. So, pressure to be explained, the girls accused, the three above named women of afflicting them, a recent epidemic of smallpox heightened, threats of Indian attack, economic uncertainties, and small town rivalries may all have primed the people of Salem, and its surrounding areas for mass hysteria that fueled the witchcraft trials. Now, although social status and gender offered little protection from accusations, historians note that single women particularly were vulnerable to charges of practicing witchcraft, while pre-adolescent girls were likewise most vulnerable to affliction. Sarah Good, Sarah Osborne, and Tituba, for example, all lacked male protectors. While three of the signatories to the bail petition pictured here, we see our widows. Now, what I have sitting in front of me is literally a piece of printed paper called the Province of the Is that a T or S's? Or S's? It looks. It should be Massachusetts Bay, but it looks like two L's. Looks like an old piece of newspaper talking about putting people to death. An act to reverse the attainders of George Burroughs and others for witchcraft, and this was embossed by Boston, B. Green, in 1713. This is printed Infirmera, 3 centuries of broadsides and other printed rarities. Now, these could be found in the Rare Book Collections Division. Now, acting on the recommendation of the clergy, this is why I hate religion, civil authorities created a special court of voyeurs and terminer to try the accused witches. So they put a conveyor belt in, basically. As the number of imprisoned people approached 150, however, public opinion shifted against the proceedings. On October 29, 1692, Massachusetts Governor William Phipps dissolved the special court, releasing many suspects and preventing further arrests. When the remaining witchcraft cases were heard in May 1693, the Superior Court failed to convict anyone else. Legislation passed in 1711 restored the rights and good names of those who had been accused. Jesus Christ. It's like no worse than being accused of something now, or no different. Except we're not getting pressed to death. We may get killed, but be a police officer or something. Now in the 1950s, Arthur Miller's play, The Crucible, explored the Salem witch trials, written during a period when concern about subversive activities ran high. Though Miller used his play to protest the Red Scars of the post-war era, once again, Miller implied innocent people were sacrificed to public hysteria. So true. Now called before the House of Un-American Activities Committee in 1956, Miller refused to supply names of people he met years before at an alleged communist writers' meeting. The resulting contempt conviction was overturned on an appeal. Now you can find out more about this on the in the Library of Congress collections, which includes additional items highlighting the early history of Massachusetts, including America's first book, The Boy Psalm Book, which was printed in 1640 in Cambridge, Massachusetts, the first complete Bible printed in America, translated into Natick, a dialect spoken by the Algonquin tribes, and published in Cambridge in 1663. The general fundamentals of the Plymouth Colony in 1671 and the 17th century laws of Massachusetts, 1672. You can also learn about the writing of Puritan minister Cotton Mather, who published early works on witchcraft in Massachusetts by searching on his name in the online catalog. You know, I'm going to look for this. I definitely want to look for this. Now, you can find more sources, documents relating to the trials through the Salem Witch Trials Documentary Archive and Transcription Project. This is at the website at University of Virginia. This would be interesting. I'm going to click on this. Definitely want to look at that. Oh, wow, that's interesting. This is definitely going to be something that I'm going to be definitely interested in looking into. Gallows Hill Research, oh, my God. I wonder how many people were, like, eating moldy bread and, like, tripping on LSD mold and got told they were witches. Or, yeah, that's just, like, horrible. So I've got some other things for you. So, and for me, it kind of really does. It hit home for me. I felt it. And I feel like it does explain a lot for a lot of people. It's not just women, it's men too. Because it takes all kinds to do this shit, you know? So. I'm back to work, and graciously, of course, they allowed me to come back. Worth it for them, I'm sure. It's weird, but a necessary evil, if you will. Have another year before I can. I had to like stop going to school because there's no point. If I finish my degree now, next year, it'll be worthless. I have to wait another year because the good old GOP says, "Well, you haven't been out of prison long enough to have a life." Treat me like a fucking convict still. It's not fair. I'm not doing anything wrong. I'm not up to many crimes. Like, the fuck? I don't get it. But it's okay. That's life, right? But I'm gonna tell everybody about it. Every prison, every girl needs to know in every prison right now. Whoever's taking cosmetology or whatever in school, In prison, you're not going to be qualified to do that degree for 15 years from the day you get out of prison. Like, we just found out all of my certs that I have now are worthless. Imagine that. Mechanic school. Fucking my IT degree will be worthless if I finish in the next year. No point. To, like, stop going to school. So, if anybody out there listening you ain't fucking been out of prison for 15 years. You're disqualified from even being a barber, a phlebotomist. Most of the jobs that you need a state test for, you won't be qualified to do. You can take the test all you want. You can take the classes all you want, but you will not be certified. They will not do it. So, don't waste your time. All right, so on to the next order on the docket. Are you going to probably be like, what? That makes so much sense. Hopefully this isn't you. If you hear this and you don't have this problem, good for you. I'm happy that you do not have this because this is shitty. But you might just know somebody who does. So, this is a little story called Why Intelligent and High-Performing Women Fall for Toxic Partners and Keep Doing It. It may seem like every high-powered woman you know is dating someone toxic, but successful women don't actually have lower standards when it comes to relationships. Instead, research shows that their driven nature attracts toxic partners and means that they're used to working hard. When I said, I like it rough, I didn't mean this fucking crazy shit. What is that, some trailer park fucking, no. That's not what I said. So anyway, how do I have the hiccups from coffee? I didn't even put any alcohol in there. Like, I smoked weed with my coffee and, like, I don't know, I feel tired. I don't know what's going on. I'm tired. I'm high, too. That's great. This never happens. Anyway, I can't keep my eyes open. It's crazy. So, toss satisfying sex into the mix, which builds chemistry, and an unhealthy relationship can quickly become a toxic one. Don't we know it? Now, Business Insider had a pretty good interesting article here. Now, ever wonder why your best friend, a total genius with the biggest brain and the warmest heart, is dating some loser in your eyes who doesn't treat her nearly as well as you know she deserves? Or why your colleague, whose shoes you dream of filling someday, comes to the office every morning complaining about her husband's absolutely cringeworthy behaviors? How in the world did these smart, successful women end up in such toxic relationships? While research says that these types of women are actually more likely to become addicted to toxic men than others. I don't know if it's addicting. It's more tiring. Because, like, if that's all you get, because the boring boys are boring as hell. If you can't keep up with me in conversation, I'm just like, ugh. So, I mean, is that what it takes? You got to be with someone, like, boring who you can barely keep conversation up with? Like, I don't know. I don't know. It's crazy. Get with a boring guy, ladies. That's safe. I guess you got to play it safe, you know? Get with the guy that's boring as shit and, like, bores you in conversation. Because if he does anything else, he's probably going to be toxic. Isn't that sad? No thanks, bro. I am not boring as fuck, and I just can't. I can't do boring boys. They're not. No, I can't do it. Addicted to toxic men, huh? Now, in other words, people you'd never expect to fall for those who treat them horribly are usually the ones that do. So why do women with such high standards in seemingly every other aspect of their lives seem to have such low standards in relationships? It's a lot more complicated than you think. And in the end, it has nothing next to do with low standards or weaknesses after all. Like, what? It's not. It's an addiction. High performance women are willing to put in the work. Why? I already work. I don't want to work more. I shouldn't have to make you. Successful women are successful because they put in the work. Now, they know that commitment reaps the rewards, and they apply that same attitude in their relationships. Yeah, but there's no rewards in it at all. Try not being in a relationship. That might actually be better. Has anyone thought of that? Like, just not? If you need a bang, why don't you just get one to bang? Don't know his, learn his name, or tell him yours, and then never talk to him again. Like, if he don't vibrate, I don't want him. Seriously. If he can speak and carry on a conversation, no, good. I don't want him. Because people are just always this. Why? I don't want to put in work. I already work. No, stop. Why do we have to put more effort? Now, stupid women like us, putting in the effort in other parts of our lives, usually has gotten the results that they're after. Why would love be any different? Because it's not real and it's stupid and it's for morons. Now, generally, you will transfer this understanding without even thinking about it. Yeah, the chances are, if you work hard on your relationships, they're going to be good. Not really, no, not at all. My psychologist and executive coach, Perpetua Neo, tells insiders that add together with the empathy, and it can be really difficult because you start to tax yourself with trying to understand why he is the way he is. In other words, high-performance women tend to just keep giving and giving and giving and giving. No, stop. Toxic men tend to target powerful women. Successful women aren't weak. Rather, they're targets for all reasons that they're actually the opposite of weak. But then you get mad when we catch you or ask questions. Like when I said, there's been 19 visits in 1 month to this place. And you said, well, I don't know, let's walk around and knock on the doors. Were you just going to tell that person to pretend not to know you when we get to that door? Because now it's obvious because you're there. So it's like the... If it quacks like a duck, looks like a duck, it's a fucking duck. Don't listen to him. He's lying to you. Use your Google, ladies. Put your email on that dude's phone and see where he goes. Like, watch. You go wherever he goes. You want to catch your fucking sorry-ass piece of a man? Fucking sign in your goddamn Google into his phone. And just leave it there. And watch, your fucking maps will start writing you and go, hey, you were here for this long. How was it? Yeah, your intuition is not lying to you. And don't worry, they don't change. They just continue. And if you're dumb enough to go back, well, it will continue until you're smart enough not to go back. It happens to all of us, so don't worry. It's not that you're stupid. It's just that you keep giving, and it doesn't matter how much you give. It's going to be the same. They're going to continue complaining and whining and protesting too much like fucking little girls. I hate that shit. Now, it's a common misperception that these men go for weak women. It's quite the opposite. These pathologically self-centered guys want a strong woman who has a lot to give. So why do narcissistic men prey on powerful women? Now, it's said because these types of men look for women who can constantly stroke their surprisingly fragile egos. Now, they also want someone steady and strong they can count on to take care of them. Nope. Particularly someone empathetic to attend to their childlike needs. Oh, that's so funny. That's my problem, is I'm not good at coddling boys. Like, I'm not, no. You got hurt? I'm sorry. I get hurt all the time. Do you want a Band-Aid? I'm not babying you. You're a fucking 32-year-old man. Just no. Do not baby them. They do not need to be babied. If your man needs to be babied like a fucking child, he has mommy issues, leave him. Leave him. Do not mate with him. He's too stupid to mate with. Don't do it. Get ripped. Drop that one. You have a man that needs you to baby him like a fucking pussy boy? I'm sorry. I thought you had a pussy already. I didn't know you needed a second one. Maybe you should fucking carry the penis and he needs to take it from the back like a bitch. So, that's, you know, no. There's no need for a male with fragile egos who needs fucking babying like a goddamn child. No, you know, I'm not saying get you a guy that's a strong person, like, so rock hard steel. What I'm saying is, don't get a guy, or stay with a guy, that needs you to be his mommy. He's a fucking man. It's okay to have feelings. It's not okay to be a fucking pussy boy and whine and cry about every fucking thing. And need you to baby him like a fucking child because he has psychological problems called mommy issues. They have fragile as fuck egos, so. Now they want someone smart who they can prove they're even smarter. Yeah. They also tend to want self-sufficient women so they don't actually have to take care of the woman's needs. Now, what do these women get in return? The quintessential alpha male who is exciting, fun, charming, and witty, which, of course, complicates things. He's funny, intense, and when you're with him, there's never a dull moment. You feel he gets you, you have chemistry, and feel high from his attention. For a while, anyway. Their sex lives are blinding. Now, it's easy to become blinded by love and, frankly, good sex. If love has nothing to do with sex. Guys fuck women all the time. Some guys have sex with women and then cry after. So, I mean, you know, choose your hard. Especially true because most people don't show their true toxic colors right off the bat. And if a relationship starts off as a loving, mutually beneficial, and growth-oriented one, it's difficult to admit it when the relationship takes a sour turn, especially for strong-headed women who tend to be the fixers. Now toss satisfying sex into the mix, which builds chemistry, remember? Now this can become toxic quickly, and that's because studies overwhelmingly show that men who possess the dark triad personality traits, narcissism, psychopathy, and Machiavellianism? Well, I didn't know that was a real thing. So are adept at beginning new relationships. They have a greater willingness and ability to complete their own sex and thus mate more. Now, meanwhile, women tend to demonstrate dueling desires, a loving and committed partner, and an attraction to men with darker personality traits, usually for the shorter term. In other words, women's innate sexual selection comes into play, and strong women who are in touch with and confident in their sexuality may pay more mind to that. I think that's so me. I'm guilty of this. Definitely guilty of it. You know, Ted Cruz mocked AOC at the CPAC after she raised money for his own state. And a female, let's see, this congresswoman here, Beth Van, what is it, Duen? I hate these people so much because y'all don't deserve to have the seat that you maintain. And Ed Stafford died by suicide outside Republican Congresswoman Beth Van Duen's home in Texas. Richard Christian Dillard, 55, killed himself outside her home in Irving. Rep Van Duen heard gunshots, went outside, and found the body before calling 911. Now they're going to be looking into the motive and how Dillard even got into the gated community. But the ex-staffer died outside the Republican Congresswoman Beth's home on Wednesday afternoon, killed himself outside the home of the first-term Texas representative while she was inside with others who all heard the gunshot. It took him how many times? Gunshots. He missed the first time. Is that what you're saying? He missed the first time. What? How? It. But. Kit. Me. Twice? Could you pull the trigger after already pulling the trigger had you died or after shooting yourself successfully the first time? Will you pop off another shot because of involuntary finger trigger movement? That's a good question. I'm confused. Now, they went outside and found the body. Police responded to the call about 3:45 p.m. Now, Dillard was the Congresswoman's campaign communications director from November 2019 to April 2020 and formerly worked as a public affairs officer for the Texas State Guard. What is going on? They're saying that a longtime friend had been in her home numerous times for holiday parties, fantasy football drafts, and other occasions. She's actually still shocked and grieving that he would take his own life. Why would he do it outside her house, though? I don't understand. If he shot himself outside her house, why? Why do it outside her house? What happened here, and why is she saying she's so surprised? You're not surprised. He went and did this shit in front of your house. Two gunshots? Okay. I'm questioning this altogether. Ex-staffer, someone who's been to her house, considers him a friend. Why did he shoot himself outside her house? Why are they asking how he even got into the gated community? How did two shots pop off if he's doing it himself? How did he do it? If he did it under his chin? I mean, can you realistically, in real time, trigger finger involuntarily after shooting yourself the first time? Or did he miss the first time? Where the fuck did the bullet go? And then hit himself the second time? What, was he nervous? Did he not want to do it? I've got questions here. This doesn't sound right to me. A staffer kills himself outside a congresswoman's house. They don't know why. They don't know how he got there, but they consider him a friend and he's been there before. Why do it outside the house? This rings bells for me. I don't know. I don't get it. It makes no sense. Nothing about this. I'm not sure. We're going to have to keep an eye on that one, huh? Now, some more today in history. Women's suffrage. I think that article really, it was explained a lot about a lot of people and a lot of reasons why we go through the things we go through. And again, today marks the woman's suffrage procession, which was in 1913. It was the first suffragist parade in Washington, D.C. It was also the first large organized march on Washington for political purposes. The procession was organized by the suffragists Alice Paul and Lucy Burns for the National American Woman's Suffrage Association. Planning for the event began in Washington in December 1912. The parade's purpose, stated in its official program, was to march in a spirit of protest against the present political organization of society from which women are excluded. Participation members vary between 5,000 to 10,000 marchers. Suffragists and supporters marched down Pennsylvania Avenue on Monday, March 3rd, 1913, the day before President Woodrow Wilson's inauguration. Paul had selected the venue and date to maximize publicity, but met resistance from the D.C. Police Department. The demonstration consisted of a procession with floats, bands, and various groups representing women at home, in school, and at the workplace. At the Treasury Building, a pageant of allegorical tableau, that's what it looks like to me, was acted out during the parade. The final act was a rally at the Memorial Continental Hall with prominent speakers including Anna Howard Shaw and Helen Keller. Prior to the event, the issue of black participation in the march threatened to cause a rift with delegations from southern states. Some blacks did march with state delegations. A group from Howard University participated in the parade. It is often said that black women were segregated at the back of the parade. However, contemporaneous sources confirm they marched with their respective state delegations or professional groups. Now, during the procession, district police failed to keep the enormous crowd off the street, impeding the marchers' progress. Now, many participants were subjected to heckling from spectators, though there were also many supporters present. The marchers were finally assisted by citizens' groups and eventually the cavalry. The police were subjected to congressional inquiry due to the security failures. The event premiered Paul's campaign to refocus the suffrage movement on obtaining a national constitutional amendment for women's suffrage, intended to pressure President Wilson to support an amendment. He resisted their demands for years afterward. The procession was featured in the film Iron-Jawed Angels in 2004, and a new U.S. $10 bill with parade imagery is planned for circulation in 2026. How about that? Yeah, she's going to be on the 20. I know.
About fucking time.
Mm-hmm.
We need to accommodate what is good in life and what people, good people. And they need to see, becoming not coach. It's just down to thinking it away.
So, today marks remembrance of the beginning of the Salem witch trials.
That's right. Is that why it hurts so deeply? What is this?
I got a clean. I know.
I got a clean
that
shirt. Like that.
It's him. That is him.
Yeah,
he did this.
I can tell.
He did it in front of me just now, but I'm in the middle of a show.
Yeah. Hey, show.
Asshole.
Hi, everybody.
Well, That is the tea. I don't think my mom wants to talk about being a child bride right now. So I won't bother her.
Nobody wants to know about it.
They do, because it's women's suffrage and it's fucking Monday.
Well, you know what? There's still a lot of...
My mom was a child bride. And religion in her small town is the issue of why she was subjected to rape, abuse, and torture, and two children she did not need. Not her mother's fault, the town's fault, and society's fault. Nothing's changed. My mom helped pave the way for women to get credit and their own shit. Think about that, Mom. When you fought for that shit, you opened doors for women behind you. Women's suffrage is, like, huge.
It took me two times to fight for that. I had to apply a different way, file a different article. But there's several different
articles. Yeah, Mom, you paved the way for a lot of women behind you. Like a lot of women before you.
That's what we're here for, right? We're going to make a change to this world until it's owned and run by women. It'd be a better world.
I really, really need to... start writing every fucking prison with females in it that offers fucking schooling for degrees they won't be able to fucking do.
Children into war. Yeah, we get mad, but we get mad over what men do more than anything, because men put other women up to dumb things.
Drive us crazy.
Drive us into anger beyond belief. When actually treating us with respect, we get a whole lot more out of it. Respect goes a long way. Always feel if you respect me, you love me. Because if I talk to you like crap, and then
Oh my God. Cash.
He throws everything off the table.
Well, you guys got a little taste of things. So that is the tea for today. I enjoyed bringing you history, and we're not far from, where are we? We're almost at 1600, so yay! Hopefully this weekend, or this week, I'll be able to catch some people doing tarot readings, but I hope everybody has a great day. Wash your hands, wear your mask, Black Lives Matter, fuck Donald Trump and the DGOP. Remember this, guys. If you got a family member in prison who's in school for some shit and thinks they're going to get out and do something, no, they ain't. You better tell them before they get out here and realize there's nothing. And they go back to offend. So, you know, everybody needs to get the word out. I'm going to write my old prison. I'm going to find somebody to write them in my old prison so they can fucking spread the word. But that's the tea for now. And I might get back on later and use up 14 minutes. We'll see. All right, that's the tea. Bye.